Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Savakis.
And I'm Zach Birchie. Welcome to AnCast number 18. We're up to show number 18.
God.
End of the year, we'll be on show 20, so that's good. You will not, an announcement, we will have shows over Christmas and New Year's. So they might be a little shorter than normal.
And we're not going to record them during Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah, they'll be a little delayed, but you will have something to listen to on the plane or whatever. I decided to finally get around to watching Honey and Clover, which you've seen.
Yeah, I saw it.
Tell me what you thought.
Well, for those who don't know, Honey and Clover is about a group of art school students. It's, you know, very much a coming-of-age sort of slice-of-life sort of show. And at first, it was a slow start. It was, it took its time to get started, and it ended up being a very interesting character study. Mm-hmm. It mostly follows a group of friends, three guys, two girls, and a teacher, as they, you know, have their, you know, confidence shaken, and they try to make their start in the world and that sort of thing. It really moved me in a way that I wasn't expecting.
It's weird because you, in the past, you said you just don't like shows that are about college kids or high school kids.
Well, if I really just hated everything that was about students, I'd never watch anime.
That's true. Yeah, very true. But I guess this is more your speed.
Well, I went to art school. You went to art school. Yeah. And I was surrounded by people not like this, but more egomaniacal and terrible. So to kind of have this alternate art school where people were nice and actually genuine and not just trying to put on this big show of how pompously amazing and genius they were and how they were just the next Andy Warhol waiting to be discovered, mm-hmm. when really they had a life full of trash collection waiting for them. It was refreshing to the point of, oh, I'm disappointed my life isn't like this, or real life isn't like this. Mm. I genuinely felt affection for the characters. I did.
Hmm. Well, that slow start got me. I got through four episodes, and I appreciated what I was seeing, but I had a hard time keeping my eyes open. Really slow, like super slow, to the point where it was taking me an hour to get through an episode because I would pause it and do something else for a little while.
Oh, there's no way you're going to get through it in that case.
Well, yeah, but it didn't reach out and grab me, and it started to irritate me that the Hagu character, who I guess is like this big argument focal point, as we've seen on Chicks on Anime, Casey Branza had this weird fixation on Hagu. But the only thing that irritated me about it was I got what the character was supposed to be, right? Emotionally immature, sort of, and her look sort of represents that. Mm-hmm. You know, I got that.
And there are plenty of Japanese women that are, in fact, that short.
Yeah, I mean, somebody posted screen caps of the live-action Honey and Clover, and there you go.
Right.
You know, that's what they're trying to get across here. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have a problem with that. My problem was everybody instantaneously falls in love with Hagu, and then they spend the first four episodes standing around, talking about Hagu, referencing Hagu, visiting Hagu, and she's not on screen. Everyone's standing around going, where's Hagu? Like, it felt like if they weren't talking about her, she was on screen. And the focus, and I'm fully aware it does not stay like that. Like,
right.
even through episode four, that started to go away. Mm-hmm. But it irritated me to the point where I was already bored, and then this. And so the combination, irritating and boring, even though I know it's a good show, like, and I did appreciate it. I liked all of the characters. And I really liked the interplay between the guys. It was very reminiscent of what college, it's ethereal. It's
right.
It's not a directly like, oh, I remember things being like this. It just sort of conjures an atmosphere.
Nostalgic.
It's nostalgic for college, which
right.
I am occasionally. So I really appreciated that aspect of it. I will give it another shot. I'm going to go back.
I would say, just based on your comments, that maybe you weren't even in the right mood for that kind of show when you watched it.
Well, honestly, after watching Baccano, like, yeah, no, I wasn't really in the mood for something like the slow boat Honey and Clover.
Yeah, this is very much a show that you just kind of, you know, marinate in. It's not a show that you go to watch something. It's more a show to just kind of, it's more of a visit than an experience.
Right. It's kind of like a Sunday afternoon.
Exactly. It's a sleepy kind of thing that you're just like, oh, I guess I'll check in with my friends at this college.
Well, that's weird, but okay. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, okay. Maybe not that.
Admittedly, though, I was watching it on Hulu. That is definitely something I would way rather have on DVD.
Yeah?
Yeah, just because I can't watch Hulu on my TV.
Oh.
So it just seemed like I needed the couch TV experience for that show, not the sitting in front of the laptop.
I totally get that.
You know, because slow shows like that, and I like a lot of my favorite movies are really slow. I'm okay with slow, but it's almost like the viewing experience has to be a certain way.
Yeah, the viewing experience on a computer, especially with a laptop, I find is very intense because it's right, you're right up against the screen, and you know, if your attention wanes even a little, you're suddenly multitasking.
Yeah, unless the show is exciting like Bacano was. I'm going to be on Twitter, I'll be checking my Facebook, I'll be on LiveJournal, I'll be on checking the ANN forums to ban people, you know. I will be insanely distracted unless the show is a reach out and grab you kind of an action.
This is the sort of show that you would have on the TV while you're playing with Holly.
Yeah, sure, why not? Right. But yeah, I think maybe I'll wait until I can snag the DVDs and then give it another shot that way.
About Hagu, I mean, I think that the people, if that's where you leave it, yes, I would understand having a problem with that character. However, if you give it a chance and you let it play through, I think most of those concerns are actually kind of addressed by the show.
Right, yeah, then that's what I've been told.
Yeah, so, and ultimately, I love the ending of the first show. I think it ends in a really good place.
You said the second season sucked.
I did not like the second season. A lot of people do, but there seems to be at least a general agreement that the second season is significantly weaker than the first.
Now, the second season doesn't take place in school, right?
Partially. Most of the students have graduated. Mayama is the guy with glasses, and he just bores the crap out of me. And most of the second season is about him and him trying to get into his first job and the various drama and odd relationships that he happens into in his internship at this little tiny design firm that's really intimate. And yeah, I didn't give a rat's ass at all. But I really like the main character, Takemoto. I think he's compelling. I ended up really liking Hagu. I think she is probably one of the most complicated characters I've seen in anime. Yamada, she gets annoying. But the second season loses its way. First season I thought was incredibly strong.
Well, to me, the entire appeal of it is the nostalgic college atmosphere and the interplay between all these students. So if you take that out, yeah, I can see...
There's not a whole lot left.
Yeah, where there's not much left. Or it's like, let's remove the central conceit of the show, the central appeal. But I'll give it a shot. I mean,
I do have to take issue with an earlier something you said over Twitter, which is that the humor didn't click for you. The humor really clicked for me. Yeah, I really found it very humorous as well.
Well,
especially the bonus episodes.
Again, I've only seen the first four and a half so. And so far the humor is people yelling and Hagu getting flustered, which is just not hilarious.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll give you that.
I'm sure it gets hilarious later on. It's a laugh a minute, but right now the humor is that's not part of the appeal of the show, but I do like what I'm seeing. I just, like I said, I got to find the right atmosphere to give it another go.
Fair enough.
But I there were definitely a lot of things about it I really liked. But speaking of which, this led me to go back and read a lot of what's been said about the show. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it focuses on, I guess the Hagu character is super controversial because some people say she's a loli and some people say she's not. And this brought me, this connected to me because we had a yet another loli argument in Shelf Life this week. And I just sort of wanted to make the pronouncement, I'm fucking done with the loli argument. They want something from me, I'm not going to give them. I want something from them, they're not going to give me. We're never going to meet in the middle. It's over. So, like, pretty much from here on out, if I see a loli outburst in the forums, I'm going to let it go maybe a couple of posts where the same, like, two things get said over and over again, like, two for, two against, and then just cut it. And just say, okay, we're done with this. Like, no more argument.
I'm for this. I mean, it's like, it's basically the anime abortion debate.
yeah, pretty much.
Everything that could possibly have been said about it, every argument you could possibly make on either side has been said. Everyone is standing their ground. No one's changing their opinion. No one's even open to other ideas at this point.
Yeah, I mean, in the past, it was at least an interesting debate. Now it's just the same couple of points made over and over again. So whatever. And everyone knows what side I'm on, and I know what side they're on. So whatever. There's no point in having the loli argument anymore. So, no more loli arguments on the forum. forms, or at least very controlled short ones.
Yeah, anime in general are the vocal anime fan base gets really worked up about usually about three given topics at any one time, and just drives those arguments into the ground.
Yeah.
Fan subs, lowly, what was another one?
No dub.
No dub.
Which we'll talk about with our guests.
Yes. We have Sean Kleckner coming on later on this show, and if anyone has taken shit for no dubs, it's him.
Yeah. But it never ceases to amaze me that those arguments, they'll still last 15 pages. They'll still go for 200 replies. And it's literally just, you could just copy-paste. So, like I said, I'm calling it here.
They're spirited kids, they are.
Hey, I admire their passion, but the repetition is getting to me. So, anyway, last week we had kind of a barn burner of a show. We had Chad on from Jenny on, and he gave us a lot of really great information, and we had a huge response to that show.
Yeah, from industry, too. A lot of my industry friends emailed me or Twittered me, and they were like, holy cow, I didn't know it was that bad over there. It was that bad over here, too, but, you know, right. we didn't want to say anything.
Yeah. It was a very interesting interesting response. So we're glad y'all, you know, enjoyed that show. And obviously, we won't have that every week. But
no, we did get some comments that will remain private for now from some other Genion guys. And they were interested in coming on, too, and presenting their points of view.
So that's not the last you'll hear about Genion.
We will be following up. There's more to this story than we could get to in a single podcast.
So. Yeah. So the other thing I sort of wanted to talk about just to round out this this segment is it has been an incredible year for animation, just in general.
Yeah.
To the point where it's easily they're going to expand the best animated feature Oscar category to 5 titles.
And for once, anime does not, it will not be unfair at all if anime gets completely ignored.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to generally disagree that the anime in whatever year deserves to win, because there's generally a really, really good Pixar movie out that's better than the anime long shot.
Usually if there's a Pixar movie, it's pretty hard argument to make.
It's a little bit better than Ghost in the Shell Innocence or whatever. or whatever else got previously potentially nominated. Most anime doesn't even make it to the nomination process unless it's Miyazaki.
Right, just the way it's released, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, plus Disney puts the money, that John Lasseter strong arms people, and they get the nomination for the Miyazaki movie, and Ponyo probably will be in the top five,
right?
The top five nominees. But as much as I can't say I appreciated Ponyo that much. it was okay, you know. I had my problems with it. Gorgeous animation. I'm actually looking forward to the Blu-ray. You still have not seen it.
I've been avoiding it.
Yeah, that kind of surprises me. You're not curious at all.
Well, after Howls, I'm really not in a hurry to watch another Miyazaki movie that people tell me is worse.
You're willing to just write the guy off, huh?
Well, I will. It's one of those things that I'll get around to eventually, but I'm just really not in a hurry because everyone tells me I'm not going to like it, so it's just...
And in Howl's defense, it was much better than Earthsea.
I couldn't make it through Earthsea.
Oh, God.
Earthsea was ungodly boring.
So fucking terrible. You know, and notably, that hasn't been released here yet, and nobody seems to give a shit.
It got released in the UK, and I don't think it really set the world on fire over there.
Right, but so like I said, it's been a great year for animation. I've seen 3 animated movies now that I will probably make it into my top 10 for the year. One of them being probably like my number 1 or 2.
Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Fantastic Mr. Fox was so good.
I really enjoyed that movie.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
That was so much fun. It was actually, I don't like Wes Anderson.
Right.
But yet, it was so clearly a Wes Anderson film. Seeing it in the context of stop motion puppets,
it works.
It so works that I feel like I get him now.
Yeah. I mean, I love Wes Anderson. He's like my second favorite director ever. So this was pure catnip for me.
Who's first, by the way?
Paul Thomas Anderson.
Okay.
But
fucking Andersons.
Right. Yeah, lots of Andersons. Not the shitty Paul Anderson, the good Paul Anderson. Not the Resident Evil guy.
No.
But his sort of mercurial kind of Tweety style fits that stop motion perfectly.
Yeah.
And I loved that movie. And then there was Up, which is fantastic.
I love Up.
Except for the very end. I still didn't like the dogs and the biplanes. I think it kind of falls apart a little bit at the end. And then this past weekend I saw Princess and the Frog. And as a Disney nerd, I thought it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
So 3 great movies. And there was even more. I mean, people loved Coraline.
Really?
Yeah, people raved about that movie. A lot of people people in the forums are saying they hope it wins Best Picture. I personally didn't think it was that impressive.
Yeah, I didn't get it.
I thought the entire final act was a mess, but people loved it. So it's refreshing, and it's kind of, speaking as an animation fan, a fan of all kinds of animation, it's great to have a year like this when there's so much good animated product out there. So if you're an anime guy or you're an anime fan and you want to get a taste of how good American animation can be, just go to the theater.
And to be fair, it was a pretty good year in Japan too, but none of that stuff is out here yet.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We still don't have Summer Wars or
Ava 2.0.
Or Ava or any of that stuff. But yeah, great year at the movies. So head on out there and see some of that good American stuff. Okay, well, that's about it. Let's go ahead and bring our guest in.
Oh, here comes you know who. Yabba dabba fruit, delicious do. Ho, 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 I'm hungry. Santa, my pebbles.
Your pebbles.
'Tis the season to be sharing, Fred.
Happy holidays, pal.
Oh, Fred. Fruity and Cocoa Pebbles cereals, part of this nutritious breakfast. Ho, 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 ho.
So we're back, and our guest this week is the well-known CEO of Right Stuff and Nozomi, Sean Kleckner.
Hello.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for being on the show. I know we're talking to you smack in the middle of both the Christmas retail season, and I guess you guys are having some snow problems.
Yeah, we had to close the office today. I guess the Twitter hash for this is Winter Death Storm 2009 or something like that.
That sucks.
So, yeah, we had to close the office today. It's been many years since I've had to do that. But what do you do? I don't want to have people who work for me have trouble getting into the office or get trapped or stranded or whatever. So we decided to close.
Okay. It's Iowa, so if they get caught in a snowbank, they will simply die. No one will ever come save them.
Well, let's hope not that that's not the case. But, I mean, I know that we had, I think, 14 or 15 inches of snow when I got up this morning, and they had pulled the plows off the road because the winds are 40 to 60 mile an hour, so the winds were real bad. So a lot of the interstates around here are actually closed at the moment. So even if I was able to get people into work, I couldn't have shipped anything. So
I've never been happier to live in L.A.
Yeah, right. I was just like, man, thank God for Southern California.
Yeah, well, when the next earthquake comes around, I'll remind you of that.
Yeah. So, how's business?
Business is not bad. Things have picked up a little bit for the holiday. Fall was quite light, which, you know, fall is usually kind of light, but it was a little bit more light than I would like it to be for this year. And for the holiday to come in and people look to finally get some purchasing going again, it's a nice thing. It's been a pleasant surprise.
What's your, to give the readers a little bit of catnip, can you tell us, like, what are your top moving items right now? What's going out the fastest?
it'd be difficult for me to do without actually running some stuff, but, I mean, you know, we have a fairly good mix of new releases. This time of year, we get a lot more merchandise sales than we normally do during the summer months. I mean, you get a lot more people picking up wall hangings and lithographs and so on. But for the most part, right now, obviously, with the way things have changed in the market, the big sellers are all box sets. I mean, that's really what people are buying right now.
So there's no real big standout right now, per se.
Well, I mean, obviously, things are doing, you know, we saw a lot of the Eva movie. I mean, there's several different titles right off the top of my head. I can't catch every single one, but that's one that I know that has done well. I mean, I've been really pleased with how the remastered Tyler box sets have done. That's been a good thing since it's such a great show, and everybody should buy it.
Plug.
Yeah, this isn't anime plug today.
Plug. Yeah. So, in any event, I mean, most of what I'm seeing are the half-season sets, the box sets, some of the Section 23 sets that some of the fans have been looking for. Those have done okay. Clannad, I know, has done very well.
Really? I find that hard to believe.
Well, he's the only one stocking it.
Oh, that's true. Right. That's, you're the only place to buy it, so I guess it's doing well for you. What about some of the Nozomi stuff? I know you guys have some stuff coming up this month or next month.
We just released the first half season of Rental Magica, and that's done well. I was really happy with the performance of that. It's only been out for 2-3 weeks now, but I think people are pleased with the big giant book that comes with it. It's a lot more than you know, somebody that can go to a streaming site or any other site and just watch it with subtitles. There's a lot of value add, I think, to that release. Plus the fact that they can watch it and the chronological order versus the kind of mixed up stuff.
Well, that would all mean something if you dubbed it, Sean.
Well, you know, I suppose that might be the case.
You guys were actually...
And the economic factors of the world would be awesome if everything in the world could be dubbed. But at the same time, I like keeping my lights on and making my house payments. So there you go.
You guys were actually one of the first studios to sort of abandon dubs as a general rule. Just how much shit did you guys take for that?
We take trouble for that all the time. I mean, I still get emails from people on it. It's not that we abandoned dubs. It really just came down to running statistical numbers on, you know, what can we sell in terms of the numbers that the units that we can put out in the field versus the amount of extra cost that it takes to put the dub on the product. I mean, as you guys both know, putting together a dub for a 13 or 26 episode TV series is a significant cost. And
probably more than you're paying for some of these shows.
Well, it's a very hefty cost. And if you know, I listened to the Ann & Cass where you had Chad Keim on, and, you know, I'm sure he could tell you that, you know, they put a lot of cost in the shows and didn't make it ever back. And I try to be very careful as to what we pick up on our licensing side to make sure that we're, you know, not going to be in that position any more than we have to be. There are some of these shows, Aria, for example. It's a wonderful show. I really like it. That was one of the reasons we picked it up. But I didn't think that if you add on the extra costs that would have put we would have had to put in to put the dub together for that, that we would have recovered those costs and likely probably would have lost money on the title. So, I mean, you have to make a reasonable judgment of what it is that you can do and make money. We're not in business to be a charity, obviously. We have to pay our bills and our employees and so on. And as long as the fans are looking for the title, I mean, yes, I know it disappoints some people.
Some more than others.
At the same time, you know, it also makes some people overjoyed that they can buy the product. I mean, otherwise, I don't think they'd see it at all.
I mean, it seems to me like a lot of the stuff you pick up, it's fairly niche material anyway. So the audience for that maybe isn't the dub enthusiast, I guess.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far. I mean, I think that there probably would be more people that would pick up some of these shows if they did have dubs.
Not enough to justify the cost.
But unfortunately, you know, I don't know that enough of more people would pick up those shows to make the dub cost back. That's the real issue.
So, I mean, what do you look for in a show? Like, when you're perusing the available folderol that's on Japanese TV, what catches your eye? What do you look for most?
Well, I look for shows that maybe have an appeal, but not necessarily a mass market appeal. Something that I know that a genre that I know people are looking for. You know, one of my big things is I like to try to find as much as possible shows that actually have an ending. And as you guys both know also, there are several shows out there that don't. And that makes it incredibly frustrating. If I can watch it at the end of the day when I'm done watching the episodes, if I'm irritated because the show ended with no ending, that's one I really don't want to buy.
Well, that cuts out about 50% of the product right there.
Yeah, and there's a lot of shows like that. You know, so I look for good writing. I mean, that's going to be one thing. Decent animation. And obviously, and I hate to say this, but you have to look at it as a competitive angle. It has to be something somebody else hasn't already bought or isn't going to be bid up into the sky. You know, there's nothing I would like better than releasing the Evangelion movie. That would have been wonderful. But, you know, when you look at the numbers that went for that, that was really not something that we can probably do.
So how much would you say what you've licensed reflects your personal taste?
You know, a lot of it does and a lot of it doesn't. I mean, obviously, I can't say that I sit around all day long watching Yali shows, but we have several of those. I mean,
sure, Sean.
There are several shows that, you know, like, for example, and I always pimp Tyler because it is a great show. That's one of the ones I really like. That's one of the reasons that we went after that particular show. I like Shingu, even though not everybody else did. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, it really comes down to what do I think that the people that we are selling to are looking for, not necessarily just what I like. If it was just everything that I like, well, that, you know, it would be pretty limited because I can't pick up a lot of those shows. You know, there's a lot of great shows out there that have been released from the other publishers in the market, and I watch some of them.
How much do you pay attention to forums chatter?
Quite a bit. I either lurk or respond to a lot of the stuff on the different forums, you know, whether it be our own forums or some of the other ones that are out there, including yours. I can't obviously respond to every single person that posts, and I do get what I run into when I do post on the forums is people sending me messages wanting to be their personal customer service rep, and obviously I just don't have the time to do that.
Or the patience, I'm sure.
Well, actually, I'm a pretty patient person when it comes to customer issues, especially if there's something I can do to help the customer. But at the same time, I do have another job. I mean, if you guys want me to do anything else, I can't sit around all day answering, you know, what happened in episode 27.
Right.
Or why wasn't this released yet? Or how come, you know, this person, you know, this company's releasing this without a dub? Or how come this price is too high? Whatever. I mean, you know, there's only so much you can do.
Right. Did the forums ever influence your licensing decisions?
I do watch what people are looking for. I absolutely do.
I mean, name a show that, like, specifically, like, if the forums didn't hype it up, you wouldn't have licensed it. Is there anything like that?
Geez, I don't even know if I'd go that far. I mean, what I do is look for what people are, what the buzz is out. What are people talking about? What are people saying, geez, I wish this was out? You know, and I see that all the time. But geez, I wish this thing was out, and it needs to be. And we go out and find out. Sometimes there's a very legitimate reason as to why no one has licensed it. Sometimes the Japanese are just insane. And there are other times when, hey, well, that is available. Let's get a screener of it. I want to see it before, you know, just because somebody thinks it's the best thing since, you know, the beginning of time. Doesn't mean it's actually a show that anybody else would buy other than that one person.
It was a lesson hard learned by ADV, I think.
Yeah. I think that's a lesson hard learned by pretty much every publisher.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be a dog in every single published group of products. I mean, there's shows that don't make money. There's shows that you think are going to be great and don't make money. And it was kind of enlightening to hear Chad talk about that and what didn't, what he thinks made money and what didn't, because a couple of those were a little bit more of a surprise to me. But, you know, it's a tough call. I mean, especially these days, the market is, you know, way bizarre. It's not like it was 4 or 5 years ago. You have to be very selective, and you can't bring out every single title that just comes your way. You got to come up with shows that would, you know, have an appeal, at least an appeal that's niche enough to make to make some money on the product.
Well,
if you're gonna put a show out and it sells 500 units, then, you know, it was a waste of everyone's time, including yours.
Well, about that, I mean, if the costs are low enough these days, now take nowadays, almost every show is being streamed by Crunchyroll, so there's subtitles already existing.
I can't say that I've watched every single one of these things on Crunchyroll, but I don't know what the quality of those subtitles are.
No, they're not very good.
You know, who translated these titles? Or did they do a good job with it? Or is it just somebody that was doing it in their spare time and they were the only one doing it, so let's grab those?
Some are.
I don't know what the quality of that is.
From what I've seen, there's clearly an A team and a B team.
Well, yeah, I mean, and they've been dropping, Crunchyroll's been seriously dropping the ball lately. Like, their quality is kind of in the toilet right now. I don't know.
I can't really comment to that because, you know, frankly, I don't have the time to watch Crunchyroll.
Okay, well, so let's say that there's already a decent translation, and, mm-hmm. you know, or it's a re-release or something, mm-hmm. and there's not a whole lot of work to put into it. Why not just pump out a show real quick on the cheap that would move 500 copies?
It depends on what you're selling those 500 copies for, and it depends on what your back-end cost licensor is.
I see.
That's going to be the big issue. I mean, just getting the materials for the show is fairly expensive. I mean, Digibaiters aren't free.
Right. Forgot about that.
And then you got to ship them. You got to ship them from Japan. That's not free. You know, beyond that, then you have to, you know, have mechanicals and other, you know, royalties for even the artwork. That's not free. I mean, it'd be wonderful if you could say, well, geez, I could get all this stuff and I don't have to pay for any of it. But, you know, if you do it right and you actually report and do the things that you got to do, you know, there's royalties everywhere from the art to the program. You got to pay somebody to actually, you know, if the translation is already done and you're happy with it, that's great. That brings the cost down substantially. But what that doesn't do is, take care of any type of performing royalties or clearances and that type of stuff that needs to be done. Artwork clearances are always the biggest problem. I will tell you that there is a show that we're working on right now that the licensor is actually, you know, very cooperative. We have no problems with the licensor, but the underlying author is the one of the most difficult people we've ever worked with in terms of actually clearing any type of artwork at all.
We'll leave it up to the forums to guess which show you're talking about.
Yeah, it's not an item that we've already released, but it does take a huge amount of time, sometimes just to get an approval. And the approval process used to be, okay, here's the art, it's all pre-approved, do whatever you want. These days it's, okay, submit every single thing that you do down to, you know, a web banner. We have to approve it before you can use it.
Web banner?
It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
That is stupid. That reminds me of my days at Anime Insider.
And then my personal favorite is the, we will give you this stuff, but we have to wait at least, you know, a certain amount of time before it's out in Japan. It's like, this is not Japan. What do we care what time, when it was released in Japan? I don't care about that. In fact, I wanted as close as one that's released to Japan as possible because the fans here want it. But, you know, I for some reason, that a lot of times that'll come through, especially when you look at, like, the Blu-ray side. Oh, we can't release your Blu-ray because, you know, the Blu-rays in Japan haven't come out yet. Well, will the Blu-ray in Japan ever come out? And if it never comes out, I guess I'm stalled. That's not fair. So that process is the big challenge. That is a process a lot of times the streaming sites don't have to deal with because they don't have packaging.
Right, it's just the show.
They don't have authoring. I mean, they don't have to have somebody approve whether or not the menu, when you press, you know, the right arrow, does what they want it to do.
Right, yeah. So speaking of that, that's an interesting topic. How does Blu-ray do for you?
Blu-ray is, you know, frankly, to me, a disappointment. I was really kind of hoping that we would see Blu-ray adoption, you know, a lot faster. But I'm not seeing the number of units there that I would like to see. Does that mean we're not selling any Blu-ray? No, that's not the case. Obviously, we're selling some Blu-ray, but it's not moving the units that I was hoping for. It's not the panacea the video industry as a whole thought it was going to be. I think part of that is the fact that the players still are a little more expensive, and those have come down, obviously, but they're still not $19 or $8 or whatever you can buy a DVD player for. And to me, the biggest issue is portability. Everybody has 14 DVD players. You got one, you know, in your car. You got one in your buddy's house. You got, you know, a portable one, and you got one in your laptop. How many Blu-ray players do you own?
Right.
One.
Yeah.
Well, for most people, it's one or zero.
Right, and the anime companies just presumably cannot afford to do the same things that the studios are starting to do, which is include the movie, a DVD, a digital copy in every package. You know,
there's a few reasons for that. One, Blu-ray authoring is enormously expensive. Okay, the only place that I'm aware of on the anime side that has Blu-ray authoring in-house is Funimation. You know, and you know, bully for them, because that really brings their cost down. But Funimation is pretty much the biggest releaser of Blu-ray at this point on the anime side. But there's such an incredible cost just to authoring Blu-ray, as well as the equipment that's required. I mean, the huge amount of hard drive space and everything else. But on top of that, you got licensing fees to Sony. You've got the Japanese who, you know, you have to deal with whatever their headache of the week is on that, and it's very frustrating. Another issue that, you know, I don't think I've seen it very much, but I know that it was when DVD came out, a lot of companies had to go back and renegotiate their contracts because it said, you know, VHS in it and not DVD. That's actually been pulled a few times on the Blu-ray side. Well, your thing says videogram. Well, it doesn't mean high definition. It doesn't say anything about high definition videogram. That's different.
So it sounds like we won't be seeing any Nozomi titles on Blu-ray anytime.
Well, obviously we have some product that we could put on Blu-ray, and I keep an eye on it. What I'm looking for is numbers. If you can show me the other product is actually moving numbers that would pay for Blu-ray authoring, then, you know, I'm certainly interested in doing it. But I'm not seeing the numbers on everybody else's titles that I would expect to pay for that Blu-ray authoring. Well, on the other side of the coin, you know, if I have some of these recent shows, say, for example, Gakuen and Alice, it's a cute little show. But, you know, it's already a niche show. Am I going to sell any more of those if I put it on Blu-ray? Probably not.
No, I wouldn't think
and
so.
And I think there was actually a very good article in Video Business just, I think, the day before yesterday, Monday, and they were talking about how even the big studios who are releasing TV on DVD on Blu-ray have reverted back to just putting it on DVD.
Yeah, really? I saw that, yeah. But it depends on the show and the price point, because the people, AMC mm-hmm. was talking about how Mad Men did great. They sold like 40% of their units on Blu-ray, but something like Nip Tuck, yep. which is $60 for 13 episodes, didn't move, so they canceled the Blu-ray release. So it really depends on the show.
Yeah, it comes down to the difference in price, too. I think that, if I remember right, Mad Men, the disc, the DVD side and the Blu-ray side was exactly the same price. You could buy either one.
Yeah, it's $25.
Versus the other ones, there was a 10 or 20 or more dollar differential between the high-def release and the regular release.
And let's face it, some shows just aren't, you're not going to get that big a bang with the 1080p. Some shows just aren't going to look that much better in high-def.
Well, and that's very true. That's very true. So why would you want to spend an extra $25 for it?
Right.
Right, I mean,
unless there's Blu-ray or BD live content or something that gives a value add. That's the thing I've talked about I talked about this at Anime Expo this year. If there's no value add to the customer, what's the point?
I've yet to see a single BD Live feature that is worth anything.
Well, and that's BD, you know, the BD Live is one thing, but I'm talking about even just standard DVD.
Right.
If people can buy, I mean, that's one of the things that I've seen commented, well, Sean, why should I buy your Nozomi release? It's a glorified fan sub. I don't agree with that at all. My product has a very nice carton for the most of my shows. They have good packaging that has, you know, looks good. Generally, they have extras. I mean, some of these we got booklets that are 128 plus pages. You know, that's not something you download.
Right. If it were a glorified fan sub, you'd be sending them out in paper sleeves, scrawled Sharpie on it, Gaku and Alice, Volume 1.
Well, and beyond that, you know, the fact that you would have to wait however long it would take to download all those episodes and so on and so forth, but. You know, there has to be a value add, and that's why I think you'll see on a lot of our releases, there's booklets, there's bios, there's notes, there's translation liner notes, there's all kinds of stuff like that. It's something that's a lot more interesting to the person who's buying the show. It's more than just the show.
Right. So now the retail landscape has changed dramatically in the last 5 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've seen the fall of Virgin and
Musicland
and all those places. And obviously I'm assuming that has helped your business. What changes have you seen, the most dramatic changes have you seen in the retail landscape, you know, in the last 5 years or so for anime?
Well, I mean, absolutely, number one would be the fall of Musicland.
Right.
Musicland was the anime panacea. That's where the go-to place was for all of the fans to go buy their product. They stocked it heavy. They had a whole section for it. It was well organized.
Now, Musicland was Musicland, Sam Goody, Suncoast, and Media Play, right?
Right, that's correct.
I heard that was like a third of anime being sold at one point.
I don't know if it was a third, but it was a fairly significant percentage. The fact is that going away, or, you know, actually was moved in, went into bankruptcy after everything else, it was really kind of one of those extra nails in the coffin. You know, Virgin, obviously, was more of a regional thing. That wasn't as bad. Even Tower, to a point, wasn't as bad as Musicland failing. The next bad spot was the shrinkage of actual available retail space at Best Buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of the anime publishers are heavily dependent on Best Buy. I mean, that was the replacement for Musicland.
Right, and it's down to a pretty low number of Best Buy stores that still even stock anything beyond the top 10 titles or so, right?
Right, right. Well, I mean, they're looking for a sizable number of units moved every single week, otherwise they don't want it in the store.
Right.
So, you know, it's not like we can put every title in Walmart, and frankly, from the returns that we would get from Walmart, that wouldn't be worth doing either. Yeah, there definitely has been a sizable change in the retail landscape, and that has not been a positive for our industry. Has it been a positive for us? Yes, I mean, frankly, we have become a lot more customers buying products from our .com site than we have had before, but it doesn't help my published titles at all, or my catalog titles at all. It doesn't help the publishers that I buy product to resell, and in essence, you know, what is good for me is not good for me.
Right. Okay, well, we should probably have a ton of Twitter questions for you, so we should probably get to those so we don't run too long here. Briefly, just want to, you know, toss out some plugs. I mean, I know you have your own show that's 2 hours of plugs, but, you know, go ahead. You know, go ahead.
Well, that's right. Although I appreciate being able to, you know, I can plug stuff all day long. I know that people have interest in certain things. I mean, the market is very bizarre right now, and I think the fans realize that. You know, it's beyond just the retail market. I mean, the publishing market is really messed up. The book market is just as bad, if not worse. And there's not a real giant, wonderful light coming there at the end of the tunnel. There's not a huge amount of new product coming from Japan either, and that's going to be a problem as well. So, you know, I'm happy to hit up anything you got. What do you got for questions?
Okay. All right. Starting out here from Mark FBR. That's Mark at Fanboy Radio. How, when, why did the whole Dark Lord Kleckner gag start?
Somebody ran with that on the anime on DVD forums, and I forget who, you know, frankly, I don't know who it was right off the top of my head that posted that, but I just thought it was really funny, and it, you know, they kept posting it, so I just ran with it.
Okay, and
I think it was sometimes it's just fun. I enjoy it. It makes me laugh.
Well, you have that little icon of you.
With the Darth Vader hat.
The Darth Vader hat, yeah.
I got all kinds of icons. I got one me in a big giant Easter Bunny outfit with buck teeth, too, but I don't post that one all over everywhere.
I think we ran that in a banner
or
something.
I remember seeing that.
Its eyes staring at me at work. Yeah, that was...
the guys at the office do a great job coming up with all kinds of weird ones. So that's kind of fun. I think they're all posted on my fan page on Facebook.
Hmm. From that book woman, gotta know, why is Right Stuff only spelled with one F?
Why is Right Stuff spelled with only one F? Originally, actually, it did have two Fs. The company originated in the late 80s as a telescope sales organization, believe it or not. When we started doing, and that didn't last for very long. It was really more of a shell company than anything else. And when we started doing things with Astro Boy, which was our first show, I was trying to figure out ways that I could get, when we were out working with customers or talking to people, how do I get people to remember, you know, about who I am or what the, you know, our company. So we took the last F off so that the show, the company's name was perennially misspelled. So people would always look at that and say, wait, that's misspelled, and they would remember it. So it's really just for remembrance.
Okay, from Exidor UK, what's the profit margin on blowout discs like the $4 Genion stuff? And do titles that...
What's the profit margin on that?
I think he's going, like, clearly somebody lost money there.
Yeah.
Well, there's not a lot of room in those discs. I mean, that the fact is, a lot of that is getting people to be able to pick up shows that they may not orderly do if they were at the regular price. I mean, some of it's, you know, getting rid of retail returns and so on. I'm not buying gold bricks and putting them in my basement off of the bargain bin. It's just not the case. But the fact is that, you know, I know that I looked at it when we started the bargain bin and started doing things in that direction as more of a, how do we get anime more affordable to people so they can try something that they may not, you know, maybe wouldn't do otherwise. And there was a lot of people saying, well, look, we can't get rid of this inventory, we don't know what to do with it. And I said, well, I got some ideas for it, and we did a number of kind of, you know, esoteric sales that have become ingrained in the world there, but the fact is there's just not a whole lot of margin. I'm not going to say how much there is, but it's not much.
Well, let's be honest, that was ADV and Jenny on going to you and went, oh my god, Music Land just returned a million units.
Well, a million units is a lot of units. I don't think that was the case, but you know, then like I said, the bargain bin is one of the higher traffic areas of our site, and I'm glad that we can, you know, make those deals available to the customers. But there's just it's not making me independently wealthy.
And also from the same guy, and do titles that didn't sell up front move better at that price? I think the obvious answer is yes.
Sometimes. I know there have been titles that we've actually put into the bargain bin that have done well enough that the publisher has re-replicated them. So, yes, I mean, there have been titles that have done well enough that people have said, well, geez, I want to keep this moving. That's doing great. It's also been a good, I think, a research tool. I think some of the publishers look at what sells and what doesn't sell at different price points as we lower them through the, you know, from what they started at to wherever it ends up at, to see what things move, and they can price their re-releases accordingly.
Final question from the same guy. Why does Nozomi keep licensing anime where nothing ever happens?
That was the question.
I guess I didn't hear that question. What was it again?
Okay, it was from the same guy, Exidor UK. Why does Nozomi keep licensing anime where nothing ever happens?
Why do we keep licensing anime where nothing ever happens?
No, where nothing ever happens. Like, he's talking about like Aria and Piano, where it's literally.
Oh, so why do we keep releasing slice of life shows? Some of them are really great shows. I don't know that I don't think all the shows we release are slice of life. I mean, certainly some of them are. I don't think I would term Rental Magica, for example, as a slice of life show.
I'm pretty sure he's just being a smartass.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, you got to keep in mind that there are fans of those type of shows, just like there's fans of Moe shows and fans of every other type of show. You know, how many fans there are of each type is the question. As long as we can bring those to those customers that are looking to buy and make a reasonable amount of money, I'm going to look at whatever titles we can get.
All right, from Tokyo Tower, WAWL, when Right Stuff first began, what did you expect for it, and how does it now compare with your original hopes?
Oh, geez, that goes back like 20-some years.
that's all telescopes.
When Right Stuff started, like I said, it was a telescope company, and I had no intention of doing anything that we're doing today. And, you know, I was actually in the computer industry selling networks, and that was one of the things that I was doing for a living. I also was selling laser tag equipment there for a while. So, I mean, it was certainly not not at all what I'd expected to be doing. You know, if you told me when I was younger, I was going to sell cartoons, I would have told you you're nuts. But, you know, I've been doing it for, 23 years next year? So, it's, I enjoy it. Is it what I expected at that point? Absolutely not. I mean, we do more sales in a day than we used to do in a full year at that point. So, yeah, I certainly think it's exceeded those expectations. But, yeah, at the same time, when you look at that time frame, heck, I was in my late teens, so I really didn't know that I would have been able to put a set of expectations together even if I wanted to.
Okay, from SX Intermedia over email, one of the hot-button issues this year has been the increase of sub-only releases and the reaction to that by dub fans. Are these complaints having any impact, or is it just the usual fringe elements of fandom being very vocal? What's the big picture here, and where do you see the dub issue going in 2010?
An interesting question. I think we've covered some of this in earlier, but yeah. there is a vocal element of dub fans. There's a vocal element of sub only fans too. I mean, it's difficult unless you do both, obviously, to please both groups. And even if you do both, you don't necessarily please them if they don't like your dub. But in any event, I think 2010 it will be very similar to this year in that there will be titles that are dubbed that are more mass market appeal products, and I think that the stuff that's more niche oriented is probably going to stick to sub only. I think that's just the way that at the moment it's going to be. I do think, I don't know if this is going to actually happen or not, but I think it's possible that you'll see dubs come out on shows that did well sub only, maybe. I don't know if that'll happen or not, but I certainly think that is a possibility. But I think that the cost of dubbing is kind of a fixed cost. There's not a lot you can do about it. I mean, certainly you can outsource your dubbing to Singapore, or you can use fan dubs or whatever. But I mean, certainly there's still a cost to doing that, and unless you get it for free, which is not necessarily going to be the best thing. And generally, that cost is fairly significant because it's by the minute over the course of multiple episodes. So unless the show is going to sell the number of units that it's required to at least break even with that dub over the course of a fairly short period of time, I just don't think you're going to see the titles be dubbed. It's simple economics. And I think that's the part that I think is frustrating to people. You try to explain that. I get fairly nasty, long rants in an email about how I suck and I didn't dub this and I ruined it, and if I hadn't bought it, somebody else would have bought it and dubbed it, and it's like, I don't think they would have, but okay, I suppose it's certainly possible somebody could have licensed one of these shows and dubbed it, but they didn't.
Probably would have lost money.
but at the same time, there's only so much that you can do to alleviate those people's concerns. I mean, I like to say that we provide a good value-add product, but, some people are certainly not going to be happy if they can't watch a dub. And I can sympathize with that. There's nothing I would like more than anything else for the industry to rewind about 5 to 6 years. That would be great for me. It would be great for the market. It would bring some of these retailers back from the dead and actually have them selling product again. It would be awesome. But times move on. The market has changed. Internet streaming has definitely affected what people will buy and what they won't buy. It has affected what people will license and what they will not license. So I don't think that really will change from this year to next year. I think the big issue is going to come down to there needs to be a significant change in the way that anime is dealt with by the Japanese companies that make it. I think that some of that is going to come from pressure from this side of the pond. I mean, you certainly have seen Funimation go out and say, look, we're going to start co-producing releases. Well, there's a reason for that. And the reason is they can get the shows that they want to get that have the storylines that they want them to have at a price that's reasonable because they don't have to, they bypass the second layer of licensing fees and everything else. The second side is if nobody buys this stuff, the people in Japan are going to have to, either adjust the way that they produce products, they're going to have to adjust how they license them, how much they ask for it, or they're going to drop the number of shows that they make, which is, if you look at the number of shows that have been released over the course of the last 2 years in Japan, it's dropped significantly. I mean, I read your guys' spring preview, I think?
Fall.
The fall one. The number of titles in that list was a fairly short list.
Yeah, I always take that number as sort of my gauge as to how much is actually being produced because they cover pretty much everything. And it's about a third less than it was 2 years ago.
Most of them were terrible.
Yep.
Well, and again, if the content's bad, who's going to buy them then too? I mean, there's a fan for every show. I mean, there are lots of people out there that like MD Geist.
Liar.
Somewhere they exist.
I'm kidding. I know they exist.
But if that's all you pump out is the same type of show, and those the customers don't want that type of show. I mean, there was that giant Moe thing for the longest time. It was nothing but Moe shows, and those just didn't do that well here.
Yeah. Okay. From King of Hearts 22, two questions about chipboard boxes. Number one, how much of an expense are they?
Chipboard boxes are about 5 times the cost of the flimsy boxes.
Interesting. And number two,
that's why you've seen a lot less people using chipboard boxes.
Right.
The other big issue with chipboard boxes, not to interrupt, but the fact is that you have to make them in larger quantities, and there are less people that can make them. Where a flimsy box, you can generally get made by your local printer.
Yeah, I think the last chipboard box I saw that wasn't a Nozomi release was the Dragon Box, Funimation's Dragon Box. I think that's the only one I've seen.
Media Blasters made a thicker box. I don't remember. I think it's a. I know there's a really heavy box, but it's definitely a thicker box for the name escapes me right off the top of my head. The Morabito release. Mm. So I know that they released that box by itself. So I know that's one that I've seen. The number of people making actual boxes has dropped off substantially. Most of those are being replaced with either stack packs or light boxes. And frankly, I'll tell you the number one reason that's happening is cost of packaging. Also for approvals, it's so much better. So if I make a stack pack or I make a light box, I have one cover to print, I have one cover to approve. If I make a carton, I have to have the carton approved and every thin pack inside the carton approved.
Right. Okay.
Plus, I got to print all those things, too. I mean, every one of those things still has to be printed, and you have to maintain inventory on them. So there you go.
Right. And he asks, will they ever make a comeback? I figure full-size chipboards don't stand a chance since retailers don't want to stock those. But what about the little thin packs like Narima Daikon Brothers? Or perhaps a little bigger like Kari Kano. Paper thin packs and light boxes just aren't as sexy. I don't want to know what he's doing with these boxes, but
I don't know that that's going to come back. I honestly certainly have in the plan that anything that we do that's our premium releases are going to probably be still chipboard boxes, but even at some point that probably will go away if the sales don't support it. I understand they're not as exciting or sexy, so to speak, but the fact is that when you're selling less units, you're looking to cut costs in any way possible, and that's one of the biggest costs there is. Replicating a DVD is a fairly low cost. Making cartons is significantly more.
Okay, and finally, from StabKid, who writes in a lot, you've been on the record at several conventions saying you didn't believe in the streaming anime business as a business model. And notably, a lot of rights to Nozomi shows are not available streaming anywhere. Ooh. Are you going to continue this in 2010? Is that going to change at all? And why don't you think streaming really works?
I guess I'm curious to see where that would comment would come from. I'm not saying that streaming as a business model doesn't work. I think streaming has a definite purpose. I just don't think that streaming and giving everything away for free indefinitely is not probably the best business model that you can put together. One, because where's your revenue from it? Mm-hmm. Two, the amount of money that you make off of streaming is so insignificant compared to the DVD sales even today that it's not going to pay for licensing fees. I will say that we do have some of our stuff streamed. I mean, we have some of our stuff on the PlayStation Network. We have stuff on Xbox Live. We have had stuff on other places as well. And we'll probably look to do more of that over the course of time. But at the moment, I don't see it as a business model that's revenue generating. And certainly, I would defer to Justin to tell me, are the people that are putting these shows up, are they making giant revenue? I mean, I'm just not seeing that.
No. But it's growing, and it's starting to grow more, I think. So I think maybe when people started, it was, people didn't know how to do it right, and slowly people are learning, and there's a learning curve. It's a new medium.
Well, and I would agree with that. I guess I'm not anti-streaming. I'm not sure that I've come out and actually said that. But what I have said, and I've said many times, is that the Japanese have to wake up to the fact that streaming is part of the puzzle. And if you don't allow the licensor to do that, then it's almost irrelevant to try to do anything. And if you have the licensor give the stuff away or have it streamed indefinitely for free somewhere, the life of or value of any other medium for that title is going to be drastically reduced. And, I just don't think that that's there's definitely a value in streaming. I mean, I will be the first person to say that I go out to Hulu from time to time and watch some of my TV shows that I miss maybe because I wasn't at home or I was working late or whatever. whatever, if the box set for that comes out and that has value add that is something beyond what I watched on the episode, I'd probably consider buying it, and I have done that. But if the episodes are out there forever, what value do I have to go get the DVD unless there's some type of significant value add? It's there for me. I can watch it whenever I want.
Right. Okay, well, I think that pretty much covers it. That's about all we've got. Thank you so much for your time, and thanks for being on the show. And good luck with the weather out there.
Well, I'm hoping that they're going to have everything cleared out today. The wind seems to have stopped, which was the biggest problem. So if they can get the roads plowed now, I'm sure we'll have everybody back at the office tomorrow. But, you know, I'm always happy to come on and chat with you guys. I guess I was looking for more retail-type stuff for the holiday than those dummy stuff. But, hey, whatever your listeners are interested in.
That's what they asked about, man. Okay, man. Well, thanks a lot.
No problem at all.